All right, y'all. Welcome back to the show. It's Anti-War Radio. And like I was telling you earlier, Sheldon Richmond and I have been talking about just what is the real history of America's intervention in Afghanistan in the era at the end of the 1980s and into the 1990s, leading up to and including the time the Taliban took over. It's a very important part of the war party's propaganda that 9/11 happened, as John McCain said in the well of the U.S. Senate the other day, yesterday or the day before yesterday, that 9/11 happened, that if only we had stayed in Afghanistan and not abandoned those poor people, then none of this would have ever happened. That's the lesson to be learned from Charlie Wilson's war, the movie, et cetera, like that. You hear it all the time. And the lesson then, of course, is so we have to stay forever now and see it through no matter what. And so Sheldon and I were talking, and he went and found a piece by Michael Scheuer at antiwar.com about it. He mentioned that Anand Gopal, the great reporter from the Christian Science Monitor, had mentioned this history on the show, either last interview or interview before that. Robert Perry has written about it for Consortium News. And yet, I'm not sure that it's really clear exactly who was being backed and what exactly it meant, but I know that Eric Margolies knows for sure, and so he's on the line right now. His website is ericmargolies.com. His book's available at all those bookselling websites and the bookstores and so forth. There's two of them, War at the Top of the World and American Raj, Liberation or Domination. Welcome to the show, Eric. How are you doing?
I'm just fine, Scott.
It's great to have you here. Okay, so now, first of all, before you tell us what you know, tell us how you know.
I started writing about the great jihad in Afghanistan, that is the resistance to the Soviet occupation in the early 1980s, met all the leaders of the seven Mujahideen groups who were then touring around trying to get money from Muslim communities. I urged the Canadian and American governments to start backing the Mujahideen against the Soviets, who were committing terrible atrocities, they and their Afghan communist allies. I wrote about Pakistan's role in sustaining the resistance. I was invited in 1985 by President Zia-ul Haq of Pakistan to interview him, to meet him. I was then briefed on the war by the head of Pakistani intelligence, ISI, went into the field, and on subsequent trips, went up into Afghanistan with the Mujahideen fighting in the field against the Soviets and their communist allies, met nearly all the Mujahideen leaders, and became very immersed in the subject. In 1982, I was invited to China by their intelligence service to talk to them about Afghanistan and to ask, they wanted to know from me if they should open arms supply lines to the Mujahideen. I said, yes, I like to think that I played a small role in that. So I was deeply involved right up through the early 1990s.
Okay, now, so the Soviet Union was beginning to fall apart. They pulled out the last of their major forces anyway. I don't know about their, you know, special groups and intelligence assets and whatever, but they pulled out their forces toward the end of 1989, right?
That's right.
And then it was about 2 years later that the final dissolution of the Soviet Union took place. And then at this point, like John McCain says, America turned its cold shoulder to the poorer Afghans when we should have stayed, right?
Well, I respect Mr. McCain as a war hero, but not as a strategist or a historian. He's dead wrong on this. The United States indeed wanted to wash its hands of of this area, but it wouldn't have made any difference regarding 9/11 if it had stayed there and built basketball arenas and things, because 9/11 was hatched out of Saudi Arabia and Spain and Europe, not out of Afghanistan. Maybe with some Pakistani help thrown in. So that was a nonsense. And the CIA stayed there training Afghan or militant Islamic groups to attack China and for use in other areas in Central Asia, possibly. But there was no reason for the U.S. to have stayed there. It wouldn't have done any good. And there's a widespread belief in Pakistan that the U.S. in fact played a role in the assassination of President Zia, who was the man who really won that war, in some kind of sordid deal with the Soviets.
All right. Now, help us understand the different factions among the Mujahideen fighters of the 80s and 90s, because you got obviously different ethnic this, that, the other thing, important double agents like you talked about before on the show, that Massoud, who I think was the guy America was backing more than anybody else, was really KGB pretending to fight. You know, Michael Scheuer had this piece that Sheldon Richman and I were looking at, where he says that the Americans basically even backed pro-communists after the Soviets left. They would back basically anyone who wasn't carrying an AK-47 and who didn't have a beard and who hadn't really fought the Soviets.
That's quite right. It's when the U.S. decided to invade Afghanistan, it allied itself with the two minorities, the Tajiks and the Uzbeks, who had formerly been allies of the Soviets and who formed the core of the Afghan Communist Party. Even today, the Afghan intelligence service, run by the members of the old Afghan Communist Party, war criminals without a doubt, and so we're hand in glove with the old Afghan communists. Well, our former allies, the Taliban, or the fathers of the Taliban, the Mujahideen, became our enemies.
Mm-hmm. Well, so I always like oversimplifying so you can help make it more complicated and, you know, accurate for us. You have this kind of ethnic split too. The Northern Alliance basically was the Uzbeks, the Tajiks, and the Hazaras versus the Pashtun-backed Taliban in the 1990s, right?
That's right.
And so where are all the communists there? All the communists are on the Northern Alliance side?
In the Northern Alliance. They were also the main drug dealers, too. The Taliban stamped out the opium trade in Afghanistan largely. The Northern Allies, Northern Alliance became our allies, were running the drug trade, and today they still dominate the drug trade. The Northern Alliance was backed by the Russians very heavily, the KGB, Russian KGB, and it was backed by Iran and India.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's, you know, maybe a silly kind of footnote, but it's sort of a side issue kind of thing. I don't know. Might as well bring it up. In the movie Rambo 3, it's Massoud who is the hero that Sylvester Stallone is helping to fight against the communists.
That's right. He was built up. The French fell in love with him because he could speak French. And he was handsome and dashing and the lion of the Panjshir Valley, and he was the leading Mujahideen leader against the Soviets. In fact, it was all a big lie. He was a KGB asset working for the Soviets secretly because they promised they would make him president of Afghanistan and that they would crush the Pashtuns, who were his bitter enemies. So he pretended to fight the Soviets, but he did not. Most of the fighting, I would say 80% of the fight, the anti-Soviet fighting, was done by the Mujahideen of Gulbuddin Hikmatyar in his group, the Hizbi Islami. They were then declared enemies of the U.S., and today U.S. drones are trying to kill Hikmatyar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they tried to bribe him, and he actually laughed in the Pakistani paper a few years back and said, yeah, I took all the CIA's money, and then I helped Osama bin Laden escape. How do you like that?
I don't know if he really did that or not. I don't have any direct knowledge. I do know Hikmatyar. I've known him for a long time. And he's a nationalist figure. He never expressed any sympathy, any anti-American feelings to me when I knew him. So perhaps it's true. Certainly bin Laden escaped through Pashtun tribal territory, so he may have had a role.
Uh-huh. All right, now... we're almost up against the commercial break here, so I guess I'll just tell everybody what's going on here. It's Anti-War Radio. I'm Scott Horton, and I'm on the line with Eric Margolies. He spent the 1980s, as he was saying at the beginning of this interview, watching, reporting on, and apparently intervening in the covert war against the Soviet Union in Afghanistan. And he knows about all these players, and we're trying to get to the details here about the period between the Soviet Union leaving and the Taliban taking over in 1996, and just how accurate John McCain is in his statement that we should have just stayed, that's the lesson of 9/11. It's ericmargolies.com for the website, and check out his books, War at the Top of the World and American Raj.
What you see here are the Mujahideen soldiers holy warriors. To us, this war is a holy war. And there's no true death for the Mujahideen, because we have taken our last rites, and we consider ourselves dead already. To us, death for our land and God is an honor.
All right, that's an actor in Rambo 3, back when the Mujahideen warriors were the good guys, and that was supposed to be Masood, who supposedly was a good guy, but actually was on the side of the Reds the whole time anyway. But anyway, so, all right. Flesh out our understanding here, Eric Margulies, the most expert Westerner on these subjects, certainly. Who's who? And who was fighting in all of the Civil War of the Warlords in the early 90s? And who was America and France and whoever intervening on the side of? Did they ever leave Afghanistan alone? Did they intervene all the way up until the Taliban took over? And did they, in fact, make a deal with the Pakistanis? Yeah, you're right. Go ahead and install the Taliban in here by the time we get to 1996.
Well, there was some lingering Western involvement for sure, but it was not heavy. And as for, you know, I want to go back to McCain's statement that we should have stayed on. Well, we weren't there. We didn't have troops there. The Western presence was expressed through Saudi intelligence and CIA and British intelligence working with the Pakistanis and the people who were running the war against the Soviets, primarily providing logistics, heavy weapons, and instructors, some combat radio communications. All of that was done by Pakistan, and all the supplies for the Mujahideen came in through Pakistan. So it was Pakistan, not the West, that did that. After the Soviet withdrawal in 89, the Soviets still maintained the communist government in Kabul. I was there with the Mujahideen fighting against their troops in Jalalabad. And after Najibullah, the Soviet man fell, then Afghanistan dissolved in chaos as the seven Mujahideen groups started fighting with each other for control, and each one had links to outside powers and arms and cash links. And then the neighbors of Afghanistan, this Uzbekistan particularly, and Kazakhstan, Tajikistan, started getting involved with their ethnic friends in Afghanistan, their cousins. So it became a very murky, involved situation. The Indians played a major role. And yet the U.S. was in there, but not in a big way. And they didn't care that the Soviet communists took over Afghanistan. That may have been okay with the CIA. Finally, after 9/11, suddenly the attitude changed. The U.S. became involved big time, and the U.S. went into alliance with the Indians and the communist regimes of Central Asia to go and try and overthrow Taliban, and now tacitly allied with the Russians.
All right. Well, now, rewinding a little bit, the way Scheuer puts it was that the Americans, and I'm sorry, I don't have the article in front of me. We were reading from it yesterday on the show. It was an article that he wrote for antiwar.com, and he talked about how they really wanted and really pushed that whole State Department fantasy about a westernized, secularized, central state-run Afghanistan, and that you know, they would bankroll basically anyone but the good guys during the 80s war. And that period lasted, I guess he doesn't say how long exactly that lasted after the Soviets left, but it wasn't too long before then the Taliban came in. And I'm curious as to the Clinton administration's opinion during that transition when the Pakistanis sent the Talibs in to take over the place in 95 and 96.
The Afghanistan was in chaos, and the Pakistanis decided to take action, and they were losing their influence in Afghanistan as they saw the Indians and the Iranians and the Russians reasserting their influence there during this period of chaos, trying to put, you know, like Masood into power as the leader. So the Pakistani Interior Ministry, not ISI, formed. They got a bunch of these religious students who were banded together to try and fight banditry and rape, mass rape of women that was going on. And a local religious teacher, Mullah Omar, who was a hero of the war against the Soviets, and suddenly they armed them and they formed this small army of religious students, supposedly, and they marched and they started fighting the bandits who were all over the place and the Afghan drug-dealing Afghan communists. And gradually, the Pakistanis supplied more and more support. The U.S. gave them their blessing to the Taliban, and the Taliban then gradually pushed the communists by the mid-1990s out of Kabul and all the way into a tiny northern region.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, at the dawn of the terror war after 9/11, a lot was made of how Tommy Franks just couldn't get it together, and Donald Rumsfeld's head almost exploded over it, and George Tenet was ready to say, hey, I already got CIA in Afghanistan. We're already buddies with Massoud. We already know who to pay off and who to give laser designators to for our Air Force to bomb. So let's get this show on the road. And that was how the war really started, was the Air Force and the CIA. So how involved were the CIA with the Northern Alliance in the time leading up to, or even with the Taliban for that matter, in the time leading up to, you know, between 96 and September 11, 2001?
They kept links open to them. And the CIA certainly kept an eye on Massoud and sent him some money to keep him on side and as a possible asset. That's perfectly understandable policy. But what the Americans did not understand was that the Taliban had nothing to do with al-Qaeda in an anti-American sense. All bin Laden was only an ally of Taliban because he was fighting the communists. And his soldiers, he had a few, it was a very small organization, were heavily involved in fighting the communists and pushing them north. After 9/11, Taliban said to the United States, show us your proof that bin Laden was guilty of this awful crime, send us an extradition request, and we'll hand him over to an international court or to an Islamic court.
Well, and they eventually even dropped that demand. They just said, we'll turn him over to any Muslim country.
That's
and
right.
That wasn't good enough either.
That's right. Now, if the U.S. had been smart, if we had any savvy for the area, we would have simply hired Taliban to go and uproot the al-Qaeda. Taliban were the sons of our former Mujahideen allies. So it was a dreadful mistake. We didn't need to bomb Afghanistan. We didn't need to go to war. In fact, in 2001, just before we invaded, I wrote an article for the Los Angeles Times saying, you know, don't attack Afghanistan, and for God's sake, if you have to invade and attack what you call al-Qaeda camps, then get the hell out as quickly as possible. Otherwise, you're going to get stuck in Afghanistan in its murderous politics. I was
Well, it seems like even Rumsfeld understood that, although maybe he was just in a hurry to turn around and invade Iraq, but he didn't seem to want to get bogged down in Afghanistan or Iraq, really, for that matter. He wanted to go in, use the Northern Alliance as proxies, let Osama escape, and then get the hell out of there rather than get bogged down into, you know, now 100,000 troops there forever and ever.
If that's the case, he knew more than most of the other people, but it turned out a trap for us. And, you know, just the way the Brzezinski claims that we trapped the Soviets.
Hey, can I keep you one more segment?
Sure.
All right, good deal. It's okay if you got to go.
No, I'll do one more segment.
All right, we're talking with Eric Margolies about the war in Afghanistan. It's been going on for a long, long time now. And, Eric, I forget whether I asked you too many questions at once or I forgot to ask you this one or if you forgot to answer it, but I wonder if maybe you said it and I wasn't listening. What was the Clinton administration's attitude toward Pakistan's installation of the Taliban in 1995-1996?
Well, initially it was just a minor issue. Didn't get much attention in Washington. Pakistan, that whole region was completely forgotten, in fact, until 2001 came. There was an amnesia. I know because I was trying to get articles published on the area and nobody wanted to publish them. So the previous administration, though in Washington, President Zia-ul-Haq of Pakistan had voiced plans to build a sort of a Pakistan-dominated Muslim area in Central Asia. And this was greeted with great alarm in Washington. They felt he was growing too big for his britches. That ended, of course, when his airplane crashed.
Mm-hmm. And was that accident, or everybody thought the CIA did it at the time,
well,
or what?
Scott, I've been looking at that for years, and I don't have the answers to it. I would say most people in Pakistan believe his plane was sabotaged by, unfortunately, us, the Americans. But it could have been done by the KGB, could have been done by his political opponents in Pakistan, including the Bhuttos. It was a very, very sophisticated assassination.
Hmm. All right, and now, they weren't entirely ignored. You've talked with us before on the show about how the Taliban was going to make a deal. They were in the process of talks with UNICAL about building a pipeline. Hey, it was the first time there'd ever been a more or less a monopoly on force and enough security in the country to build a pipeline across it in a long, long time. And then, as you have written and have said on the show, it was Osama bin Laden who convinced Mullah Omar to give that contract to an Argentine company instead. And so this is why you could see the motive would be there to, instead of saying, hey, Taliban, let's get rid of Osama bin Laden together after 9/11, that they would prefer to go ahead and worry about taking Kabul and let Osama bin Laden get way over the horizon.
Quite right, Scott. They enter the pipeline issue, which was really the main interest for the United States after the Soviets were driven out. The oil companies raised hell about it, UNICAL, and certainly after that, Taliban was put on America's blacklist for punishment.
Well, and so that's too bad, because then, as you say, they made the very bad decision to try to fight against the majority, or at least the most powerful force in Afghanistan as far as natural power goes. Now they've got this giant bubble of power under the Northern Alliance called NATO and the United States that is a completely unnatural situation that can't last.
It's the ethnic mathematics of Afghanistan are against the United States. We have done exactly what the Soviets did. We've allied ourselves with two minorities, groups, against the majority of Afghan. The Pashtuns are about 50%, maybe 55% of the population, and very fierce people, and very independent-minded. And they look down on the Tajiks and the Uzbeks, who hate the Pashtuns as wild mountain hillbillies. And so we set ourselves up for failure by doing this, and we're still stuck in this problem. And that's why they can't cobble together an army, a puppet army in Afghanistan, because most of the members are Pashtuns, are Uzbeks and Tajiks, and they're regarded as foreign, as enemies by the majority Pashtun.
Well, so is there even such a thing as Afghanistan at all?
Well, notationally, yeah, as a geographical area, like to talk about the Balkans or something like
right.
that. But Afghanistan never had a strong central government. It was never a completely unified country. It was just
the problem
space.
Of the old world is just ethnicity is the border, basically, or if it's not the border, it's what they're fighting over.
That's quite right. And then add what the British did, which was to truncate the Pashtun tribal people by creating drawing the Durand Line, which became the Afghan-Pakistan border.
Mm-hmm.
And they cut in half the whole Pakistan, the Pashtun tribes, so who don't recognize this border to this day. So it was a built-in instability.
Now, I think the first place... No, maybe it was a news story, but the first good opinion piece I read, or the first good review I read of Michael Scheuer's book, Imperial Hubris, was yours. He's the former chief of the CIA's Bin Laden unit, the guy that gave Bill Clinton 10 chances to kill him before 9/11. And in his book, he makes the case that they're trying to lure us into a trap. And you picked up that book and immediately put down this article saying, everyone, listen to this guy. It's a trap.
That's right, but I've been writing for a long time. Scheuer was right, Margulies is right. Bin Laden had enunciated a strategy in the early 90s, I think it was 1992, where he said that we cannot defeat America militarily, it's too powerful. The only way we can defeat America is drive it out of the Muslim world, not defeat it, but just drive it out of our part of the world. And stop it from raping our resources is to draw America, trap America into lots of little conflicts and wars, bleed them, and drain their economy. That is their Achilles heel. Well, we fell right into the strategic trap set by bin Laden. And that's why I wrote recently that, you know, bin Laden is dead, but his ghost is still haunting us, because here we are trapped in lots of these nasty little wars. And President Obama is spreading this and going into new ones in West Africa and Yemen and in East Africa. So that will prove our undoing.
Uh-huh. Well, and, you know, it's amazing because it wasn't just you and Ron Paul and me and others before this thing ever happened who had it right. It was the general public, the conventional wisdom before the before Al-Qaeda ever came into existence, before the war in the Persian Gulf and the occupation of Afghan land. It was the American strategy. Again, 30 seconds from Rambo 3.
You started this damn war. Now you have to deal with it.
And we will. It is just a matter of time before we achieve a complete victory.
You know, there won't be a victory. Every day your war machines lose ground to a bunch of poorly armed, poorly equipped freedom fighters. The fact is that you underestimated your competition. If you'd studied your history, you'd know that these people have never given up to anyone. They'd rather die than be slaves to an invading army. You can't defeat a people like that. We tried. We already had our Vietnam. Now you're going to have yours.
And you know, Eric, it's actually part of the lore that Zbigniew Brzezinski wrote a memo to Jimmy Carter in 1979 saying, now we're going to give them their own Vietnam. Afghanistan will be the swamp where they drown, the mountains where they break their backs.
Yeah, Brzezinski told me that too. But
here we are giving ourselves our own Vietnam again, just according to the script.
He overrates his role in that.
But it was our Vietnam.
And this is the latest graveyard of empires, because from President Obama's speech yesterday, it's clear that this is the high water point of American imperial adventures, and the U.S. is now going to start withdrawing. The first thing I thought of was Kipling's wonderful poem called Recessional, where he writes about the fall of empires.
Yeah, well, you know, it really is interesting. I wonder whether there's some magic religious thing about Afghanistan that I just don't understand that makes it where every empire wants to go and commit suicide there.
It has mountains. It has the two bravest people in the world I ever saw in combat, the Chechens and the Afghans, the Pashtun Afghans. So you don't fight them. It's crazy to do so. And there's an old saying, beware the vengeance of the Afghans. They will never forget.
Yeah.
So we were stupid to go in that country of a very freedom-loving people, the original freedom fighters, if you want, who don't want any foreigners. And they will continue fighting until they drive foreign influence out. And yet here we are using B-1 bombers and tanks and white phosphorus and cluster munitions and the whole weight of the U.S. Army, Air Force, and naval aviation against these people. I find it, as a former GI, I can find it kind of shameful.
Yeah. Well, you know, bin Laden said in the 2004 speech, if people don't, you know, can't remember back to 1992 like you on this, in the 2004 please re-elect George Bush speech, he said, all I have to do is send two generals, or two mujahideen to the furthest point east with a piece of cloth upon which it is written Al-Qaeda, and you'll send all your generals and all your billions of dollars racing until finally your entire society is broken and you leave us the hell alone.
Voila.
That's plain English. I mean, plain Arabic.
We have so over exaggerated Al-Qaeda that we've now believe our own fake propaganda on this issue, and we've become hysterical. Pavlovian response, Al-Qaeda, rush, bomb, money. Look at the billions that we have wasted. Just the latest report on $18 billion disappeared in Iraq. The billions in Afghanistan, you know, all the local leaders in these places are laughing at us because they are also waving the Al-Qaeda banner, because they know when they do that, the money falls from the skies.
Yeah. Well, and you know that Vladimir Putin is just sitting back laughing. Oh, you guys need to use our territory to supply your guys? Sure. Go right ahead. We'll give you your own Vietnam again. We'll just play this game back and forth until everybody's poor.
And you're going to have to give us various concessions, which you don't want to discuss publicly.
Exactly. Well, do you know any of those off the top of your head before we cut this off?
No, I don't.
Oh, okay, good. But I'm sure there are some. Why don't you find out for us, Eric, and let us know.
Will do, Scott.
All right, everybody, that's the great Eric Margolese. EricMargolese.com. The books are War at the Top of the World and American Raj. You can also find them at LouRockwell.com. Appreciate it again.
Cheers, Scott.